Last week, the New York Times warned that the Trump administration may soon define 1.4 million transgender Americans out of existence. One of those Americans is Tracy Najeha, who was just this year sworn in as the first known transgender judge in Arizona. And she's not the only one now aiming to be a ray of hope for Arizonans. Democrats have put a lot of resources into energizing the youth vote, but will their efforts pay off? You're listening to The Breakdown. Welcome back, podcast listeners. I'm your host, Katie Campbell, here with reporter Carmen Foreman. We're kicking off this week's episode with a story that was never meant to be, or at least never intended to be, a story. Tracy Najeha spent the first 40-plus years of her life as Tom. For years, she kept her true self hidden from her wife and children, her friends, and her law partners. She told me she had known since she was just 6 or 7 years old that she was actually a girl inside, but she never knew how to express that. And she was desperately afraid that if someone learned the truth, everything would come crashing down around her.
Fear is an incredibly powerful emotion. And it basically drove the fear of rejection, the fear of not being lovable, just not being accepted by the people who you rely on, your family, your friends, and all that kind of stuff. That fear drove most of the first 40 plus years of my life because I didn't think that anybody would understand this, that anybody would accept it. And I spent so much energy and effort to keep this part of me to myself so I could try to lead as much of an average life as I possibly could.
She finally faced her fear for the first time when she came out to her wife of 15 years. And guess what? Her life did not come crashing down all around her. She was not kicked out of her home or kept away from her children. Instead, she was supported. And from there, she just kept having these really positive experiences that built on that. Somewhere as big as attending her 30th high school reunion, the first time she had ever appeared to her high school friends as Tracy, and was greeted with nothing but acceptance. And other moments were small but no less impactful, like how the cashier at the grocery store treated her just like any other customer the first time she ventured out as Tracy.
When people just treat you as another person, how affirming that is, and how just those little things about checking out at the grocery store when you know you don't look like you fit in, but that person just treats you like every single other person that's in line. How those little moments add up to making you feel comfortable that you can do this, that you can, there is a tomorrow, and tomorrow is going to be better than yesterday. And so it is, it's just these little stories that all add up, that had somebody treated me horribly wrong the first time that I went out as Tracy,
right. What
somebody may have said to me or how they treated me or whatever, I look back at and go, where would I be today? Would that have just pushed me back, you know, to where I was before? Would that have just erased all the progress that I made going, I can't do it. I can't be who I am because it's not going to be well received.
All of this to say, Tracy has only ever wanted one thing. To live her life to the fullest, to use her education as an attorney to serve others, and just exist like anyone else. She never wanted to make a statement or become a story, but she did. Just this year, Tracy was sworn in as Arizona's first transgender judge. She may be just the third transgender judge in the whole country. And just a note here, I say maybe because that's been a tough one to verify because there are a lot of judges out there and no one group seems to be keeping track. But anyway, the point is, she was the first here in Arizona, actually right here in Maricopa County. She was appointed as a commissioner in the criminal department, and she's currently overseeing initial appearances down at the 4th Avenue Jail. She loves it. And she loves it in part because this is what she's always wanted, to succeed at life no matter who she was, for people to see that she's just another human being who is more than capable in the eyes of the law. Now, she wasn't sure that she wanted to do this story at first. The idea terrified her because she's just spent so much energy in the past hiding this part of her. But she ultimately decided to talk to me because not everyone in the transgender community has such a positive experience. She's not political, totally apolitical, actually. She wasn't trying to make a statement when she applied for the commissionership. But this moment in history comes at a time when the transgender community feels attacked. The New York Times recently reported that President Trump's administration is looking to legally define gender as either male or female and determined by a person's genitals at birth. No wiggle room there for people who identify differently. And the Times estimated that 1.4 million Americans would essentially be defined out of existence. That's the Times words, defined out of existence. And Tracy would be among them. Imagine spending decades living as someone who doesn't feel like your real self. Finally going through the long process of showing the world who you are, who you have always known yourself to be inside, and then knowing that could be taken away.
Ultimately, when I did come out, I realized how amazing life could be when you're given the opportunity to be yourself. The last thing on my mind every night, and the first thing that was on my mind every single morning, and about 1,000 times every single day is, I don't get a chance to live life as myself, okay? Mm-hmm. People take for granted when they wake up in the morning and they look in the mirror, they may not necessarily always like what's going on in their life or what they see, but one thing that they always know is who they are. Okay, they look in the mirror and the person staring back at them, that is the person who they are. And I never had that my whole life. I always just wanted the opportunity to live life, even if it was just briefly, a day or a week or whatever, to know what life was like, to be my real self. And I never thought that that day would ever come, ever. I lived in total anonymity in this part of my life until probably about 15 years into my marriage. I mean, my wife didn't know about it, none of my friends. I mean, there was no clue. Nobody had any idea whatsoever. And to kind of skip forward in the story, I've been given this amazing opportunity, not necessarily through this position, but just in life itself, that I get to wake up now and be myself every day. Mm-hmm. And what a gift that is. Seriously, what a gift that is.
Now, to be clear, Tracy and I did not explicitly talk about this definition issue. We kept it more specifically to her story and her own personal struggle with accepting that as a story at all. And she just kind of hit on all of these really heavy, important points. Like how easy it is for me, and maybe you, Carmen, to wake up every day as ourselves. And listeners, if you'll indulge me for a second, I broke off from my usual stream of questions with Tracy to ask her point blank, was I wrong to be making her story a news story? Like, was I perpetuating this sense of otherness about the transgender community by profiling her and no other new commissioner? Honestly, I wanted to know. So here's how that conversation went.
So this is always the clash or the controversy. It's like right. I said, is, you know, on one hand, I just want to be seen as like every other judicial officer that's out. You know, just, it's Tracy, just like it's this person or that person, that person. It's that there's no story there. That's how personally, but I do have to accept that, like I said in the very beginning, is that there are people out there right now who may have just come out. Mm-hmm. They're struggling with trying to find out what life has in store for them, or they're at home struggling with the idea of whether or not they're gonna come out, and they don't know what their future has in store for them. So I think it is kind of important to some degree to let those people know that, you know, there are success stories out there, okay? Right. I mean, you may not be a lawyer or end up being a judicial officer or anything else. You know, I get that. Your life may be on a different trajectory.
Right.
I understand from your perspective, you're like, well, you know, does writing this story somehow, you know, shine a spotlight that maybe shouldn't. And look,
right.
And I'm not going to fool myself to think that not everybody's going to read this story and necessarily be understanding or accepting of it. I get it. and that's perfectly fine. You know, I wish, I think that usually when people get a chance to meet me, like I say, that they sit there and go, oh, wow, that's a regular person. Competent, ethical.
What a novel concept.
Exactly. Works super hard, super dedicated. And the other thing I do think of, too, is, you know, a lot of parents who have children who are struggling with this issue or whatever, you know, you want to see your children be very successful. Mm-hmm. You want to see them, you know, fulfill all of their dreams and all that. And I do get from a parent's perspective that these stories are encouraging, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, you can look and sit there and say, you know, yeah, there's got to be a first to this or first to that or first to that. And that's newsworthy. Mm-hmm. And I understand, you know, I get that part of it.
Yeah.
And you do. You just kind of hope. I mean, you just hope that if this story does get published, mm-hmm. That people will look at it and go, you know, okay, well, we've taken a step forward.
Right.
And
let her do her job.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, and see where that goes. So, yeah. So I'm kind of curious from your perspective.
Yeah. When we come back, Carmen is going to pivot us back to election season. We couldn't stay away forever, I guess. Stay with us. Can't wait for your weekly Arizona Capital Times? Then subscribe to the Yellow Sheet Report. The Yellow Sheet Report brings you the latest news and hottest political gossip in town every day, thanks to our trusty team of reporters. And with the legislative session right around the corner, there's no better time than now to get in the know with the Yellow Sheet Report. Learn more at yellowsheetreport.com today. Welcome back to The Breakdown. I'm your host, Katie Campbell, and after very patiently waiting through the first half of our episode, Carmen is here to bring us up to speed on our election coverage. With just 1 week to go, we had a significant bit of news drop on Friday. If you haven't already heard, folks, the full Arizona Supreme Court decision on the Invest in Education Act was released last week. Carmen, what did we learn?
I mean, we already knew that the Invest in Education Act had been kicked off the ballot, and a majority of the justices had some problems with how the description of the initiative was worded. So really, the full opinion just kind of elaborated on what they felt were exactly the description problems. To be fair, some of those problems were pointed out by JLBC and legislative counsel before the court battle over the Invest in Education Act even started. The ruling, or I should say the opinion, also elaborated which judges sided which way. So the ruling also detailed which justices voted which way or sided which way. And it was a 5-2 decision with Chief Justice Scott Bales and Justice Ann Scott Timmer dissenting on the opinion. And in the full opinion that was released on Friday, they also got room to detail why they felt the initiative should not have been kicked off the ballot. And they basically said they're not demanding perfection with these ballot initiatives. And so you can't expect 100% on the initiatives. And if it fails at the ballot, that's on the people who wrote it.
Right. And I think one of the things Chief Justice Bales really was honing in on was while he agreed that 100-word description might have been ambiguous, he didn't feel that it was dangerously confusing, as the majority ruled and essentially the law states that if it is confusing and could possibly mislead voters, then it's a no-go. And the majority opinion addressed that ambiguity concern and essentially said it's a lot more than Chief Justice Bales made it out to be. The quote I'm looking at specifically says, "Ambiguity is the root of confusion." So there you go. But getting to the root of the overall problem. Now, this decision spurred outrage immediately. The first decision simply saying it was removed from the ballot and here's like a basic reason. People immediately called out for targeting the retention elections of Justices Clint Bolick and John Pelander. And that was followed by an attempt to quell any misgivings about how that decision came about, which led to communications from the Ducey camp. What do we know now about what they said at the time and how the vote actually fell?
So the Ducey campaign told reporters the day after, some reporters, I should say, I was one of those lucky few, I guess, that the decision was 5-2 and that Timmer and Bales were the dissenting votes. And they said that that was just a rumor that they had heard. But when that came out, when some reporters mentioned that on a local TV station, Democrats and Invest in Ed supporters got even more outraged because it gave this impression that Doozy's campaign knew about the vote before the general public and before the lawyers on each side, et cetera, et cetera. And some people even went so far as to stretch it to say that maybe Doozy or Doozy's campaign had somehow influenced the vote, and that is how they knew that it was 5-2 and that there were these two specific judges who dissented. So fast forward to Friday when the full opinion came out and it was a 5-2 vote and those same two justices dissented, making it very clear that Doozy's campaign did know something. And whether it was a rumor or not, Democrats and Invest in Ed supporters immediately pounced on it to push this narrative that there was corruption, that there was collusion within the court system or within the court system and the executive branch.
So what did Doozy's spokespeople have to say on Friday about the fact that this perfectly matched their so-called rumor?
Honestly, they didn't have much new to say. They doubled down on the fact, saying it was a rumor, saying that it was told to reporters on background and that, you know, that they had nothing to do with the verdict or the opinion, and that there was no insider information. So really nothing new coming out of their campaign.
But as you said, that didn't stop anyone from using this information to confirm their worst fears and for them to jump on Twitter and immediately say, you know, here you go. Here's the proof you were looking for. Do you think, though, that this is going to have an impact on the elections? We've got a week to go. Like, a week from today, we will be, you know, prepping for election night. So what could this possibly do at this point?
Two things on that. First thing, I think a lot of people who already thought that there was collusion or corruption, they already thought that. Nothing has changed in their minds. They've been thinking that for, what, 2 months since the initial 5-paragraph ruling came out. The second thing is, it could affect some elections. Depends on which elections we're talking about. Is Governor Doug Ducey going to lose his reelection bid over this? That seems highly unlikely. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I could list them off very quickly. He has a lot of money. His opponent doesn't. He seems to be surging the polls. His opponent isn't. There seems to be a 12-point GOP ballot advantage from early ballot returns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I could keep going for a long time, but I won't. But if we look at some other elections, say Justices Bullock and Polander, who are up for retention elections, it's hard to know on that sort of race because it is very low profile. I would imagine a lot of people don't know that these justices are up for retention election or that you as your regular voter can vote to oust your justices. But Katie, I think you mentioned talking to Dan Barr earlier today, and he kind of said something along the lines of like, well, if people wanted to oust those justices, they already voted to oust those justices.
Yeah, essentially Dan's point was if something like the initial opinion or the opinion at all was going to influence how you voted in the retention elections, you'd already made up your mind. The fact that they removed it from the ballot was going to sway you one way or the other. And just to know, I mean, that I've spoken to Dan before about that. That's concerning to him because of judicial independence. So his fear is that by voting these judges out simply because these folks disagree with them is going to leave justices and judges looking over their shoulders and thinking, gee, like, I really think this is the right thing to do, but the people are definitely not going to like that. And that could really skew how they vote in the future. And that's dangerous as well. So when people are talking about corruption or the influencing of the courts, by targeting the retention elections, that could also influence the court. So just, you know, from a legal standpoint, lawyers have said that that's something that voters should really keep in mind when they go to the ballots, if they're going to vote based on that. And some of those voters may think, yes, we are exercising our rights to as a check on the judiciary in this way. Just think about the future implications. Something else Dan noted that also stood out to me, Carmen, was there was a lot of talk of indexing, and I don't have nearly the wonky background knowledge that certain individuals, cough, cough, Ben, who's not with us, might have. So I'm not going to get into the indexing issue itself, but essentially part of the problem was that this 100-word description did not anticipate its impact on the indexing of tax brackets. And Bales and Timmer argued, well, we can't hold them accountable for unintended consequences, let alone include that in such a tiny description anyway. While the majority really kind of got caught up on that. They said, look, there's all these extra consequences. The voters had no idea, and that's a problem. So there's a kind of a question there of, is that something initiatives will have to worry about in the future? And that's very much up in the air at this point. But another question that you and Ben were exploring on Friday was the question of strict compliance. And that did come up in the Superior Court's decision to retain this proposition on the ballot, but it didn't quite come up in the Supreme Court's opinion. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. The Supreme Court really didn't touch that in their full opinion on Invest in Ed, which was kind of surprising. And again, Ben, who is not here, would probably know more about that than I would. But I think a lot of people were looking for answers on strict compliance and did not find them in the full opinion. Or maybe that's just us nerdy, wonky folks out here. So
certainly still a lot of questions up in the air, but we're hoping to hear about that later. And it might just be something that comes up again and again in these initiatives until finally somebody's going to have to just finally say yes or no to this thing. But there's so much else coming up in next week's general election. And no matter how the retention elections go, we can bet that youth voters won't play a super significant role in those decisions. Sorry, fellow young people, but the youth turnout has always been hard to ramp up, and this cycle is shaping up to be no different. But that hasn't stopped Democrats from trying, has it, Carmen?
Democrats are ever the optimists. Every election cycle, they're hopeful that they can turn out Latinos, that they can turn out young voters. And this year, I think more than other years, there was this expectation that young people, millennials, are so enraged at Trump that they're going to get out and vote and go to the polls in droves. But early ballot indicators don't indicate that that's likely to happen. But you have these programs like Next Gen Arizona, which has never done its thing in Arizona before, but has operated in other states. And it's essentially trying to get young people ages 18 to 35 registered and then get them out to the polls in the hopes that they could get progressives elected. And specifically, they're looking at races such as the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, and CD 1, 2, and 9, which are very hot races, very contested. They also happen to be home to the state's major colleges and universities where, shocker, lots of young people reside. So with NextGen in Arizona this year, I think some thought that there could be this impressive boost that not only were they just living on a wish and a prayer that these young people would turn out, they actually have this organization that is working to do just that. But things don't look good. And it's still early, and young people tend to vote later in the election cycle, or they tend to show up on election day. But, you know, the political pundits that I talked to essentially said that, yes, there will probably be a boost in the youth vote. There will be a bump, but it won't be huge. It won't be drastic. It won't alter the course of Arizona's elections for the most part.
Well, I have to imagine, like in the context of a governor's race, especially our governor's race, the crossover voters do see attracts probably far outnumbers those youth voters who are going to turn out for David Garcia.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. And it's interesting, having come from Virginia, NextGen did do its thing in Virginia last year. And it's hard to know if that's what played such a pivotal role in Democrats winning all the statewide elections and picking up a huge amount of House seats. But it clearly played some sort of role because the amount of youth voter turnout was higher than it had ever been before in Virginia. And so I think that NextGen was hoping to duplicate that in the 11 states that they're working in this year.
It also kind of occurs to me, and I've thought about this as I've seen the registration numbers from that NextGen has been pulling in, and obviously they're impressive, like 21,000 in one case, which was far more than they expected. It occurs to me, though, that registering a voter is very different than getting that voter to actually vote. How do they actually differ in their strategy there? How do they translate that new registered voter to an actual ballot cast?
Yeah, so after they registered a bunch of voters, they switched their focus to getting those voters out, and they do so through texting them. They have a bunch of digital advertising targeted at millennials. They're offering rides to the polls on election day. They're offering Lyft and Uber discounts so students can get rides to the polls. So they're employing a number of strategies to turn that registered voter into a first-time voter.
I just want to end on a quick note. I mean, you mentioned text messages, and that came up last week as well, political messaging. I imagine with the next gen situation, that's something that you would opt into as you're working with that group to register or then to vote. But there was a question posed to the Arizona Attorney General's office about whether campaigns can just text you out of the blue asking for your vote. Where are we on that, and what are the implications?
So the Attorney General's office received a complaint about Arizona Wins and David Garcia's campaign. Essentially, Arizona Wins was texting folks on behalf of David Garcia's campaign. And the complaint was from before the primary election. And so the AG's office took that complaint and has passed it along to the Secretary of State's office, which is now looking at it and determining whether it's legal or not to send these sorts of text messages. And I know I sound like a broken record here because, like, I dealt with this before in Virginia. The gist of it is that you're not supposed to be receiving text messages that you did not opt into. Those are essentially illegal. So maybe the Secretary of State's office will make a determination on that. Fun tidbit, when I was covering NextGen in Virginia, they got into essentially a lot of trouble because, maybe not trouble, but more of like a PR nightmare situation, because they had FOIA'd student directories from all of the colleges and universities in Virginia. And the directories for most of those schools, I think they got like 18 or 20 of the directories from some 40-odd universities in the state, public universities in the state. And those directories contained a number of cell phone numbers for students. And they then took those cell phone numbers, and their idea was that they were going to text these students to get them to register to vote or to get them to turn out at the polls. But then information came out about this is how they receive students' information, and it didn't look great on them. I don't think that they ever used the phone numbers for that regard because it didn't look so great. And then Virginia changed the law, so now they can't do that anymore.
I've always thought that Arizona was Florida's West Coast cousin, but it's starting to sound more and more like we might be Virginia's West Coast cousin, because everything that happens here, you've already dealt with, which is why we hired you. Anyway, obviously, lots going on down at the Capitol and so much more coming. This week is going to be crazy as we prepare for elections. Railbirds, we want to hear all about your predictions or any fun pre-election tidbits. We want it all. And don't forget to come back next week to azcapitaltimes.com to hear all about what happens on election night. On Monday, we're going to have a little preview episode just with some of our predictions. And after that, we move on. We move on with our new electeds. So get out to the polls, voters. We're counting on you to show up and do your civic duty, because then we get to cover all of your favorites. Until next time, happy election day. Happy election, pre-election week, day.